chapter, of course, speaks of a very interesting event that occurred. First chapter, 37, speaks of the famous sale of the Jewish Jesus. Yosef was sold by his brother. Second chapter of 38 speaks about the episode of Yehuda and Tamar. The third chapter, chapter 39, about the episode of Yosef and Ashes Potiphar, wife of Potiphar. Fourth chapter speaks about the Kisran Kalomos, the fact that Yosef was able to answer and to interpret properly the dreams. We see that many of the most famous chapters are mentioned here. And the first three that I mentioned have to do with human relationships, with values, and occurrences that are very interesting. Let's just go through like the story of the first chapter, which is the Parsha of Vayeshev. It speaks there of Yosef HaTzadik, who was 17 years old, and his relationship with his brother, sentence 2, 37-2, it says, Yosef was 17 years old, he would be a shepherd with his brothers, Batsayim and the sheep. He was a youth, together with the children of the two concubines, that they're called the wives of the father. By Yoda Yosef as he comes in royal Avinah, and he brought their evil tidings to the father. Now there are two different approaches and interpretation of this. Hirsch speaks of the personality of Yosef and the type of an individual he was. He interprets this that he was estranged from the brothers. And therefore, Reyes Ephotatsayim, business, formal business, he had to be with the older brothers, the brothers meaning the sons of Leif. And Rashi says, the Unai, meaning he combed his hair and he used to behave like a young boy. Then he would be with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah. That means socially, fraternally, the brothers did not have anything to do with. And Hirsch points out that you see how he grew up. He didn't have any real siblings because the brothers of Leah held themselves different, and he didn't have any mother. So he was, in a sense, a loner. And it says, Yisrael ohav es Yosef, like in the next sentence, Yisrael loved Yosef from all his sons, ki ben zikunim ulo, because he was a son of his old age, or some say Ben Chakimo, he was a wise son. The word Ben Zikunim has many interpretations. One interpretation is that the Ramban brings them and says Ben Zikunim, you always designate a son to serve you when you're older. You need someone to bring your stick and someone to bring you your slippers. So you would always go ahead and have this son. And this is what Ben Zikunim was. Or some say he was the youngest little. Some say Ben Zikunim, that Yaakov Avinu saw that he possessed the wisdom. Zokain a Chokhmah of wisdom, that means the Torah that Yaakov Avinu represented and taught was best personified, or he saw it in the spirit of Yosef. And he made him Exenus Pasi. I would think that if you learn the first interpretation, that it was because he was strange, he didn't have any relationship with his brothers, and he didn't have a mother. So then it would be understandable why Yosef received the love of the father, in a sense, because he gave him this extra amount of love to make up for the fact that he was like a loner. But then what he did was, he brought, it says in the previous sentence, Yosef would go and bring the awesome royal Avim. He would go back to the father and tell the father, Lashon Hara, about the sons. Now, about the children, what Lashon Hara did he say? So the Medrash brings down some very strong accusations, which really were not true, but it seemed to him that way. So far, he would say that they're eating Eber Min Achai. They're eating an animal, a limb from an animal that was not killed yet. But really what he saw was, perhaps, that it was a Ben Tekuah. There is a law that certain times, if you, according to the law of the Torah, if you would slaughter an animal and find a living child in that animal really wouldn't have to have Shemitah because it would be considered in our Torah as if it was already slaughtered. Or it says he would go ahead and say that they are treating the Bnei Bilhah and Bnei Zilpah, they're calling them slaves. They're not treating them properly. Or another thing that he said was that they were the Bnei Sa'aretz. They used to intermingle with the women of that land. They didn't behave properly. So he would bring all of these words back to Yaakov. So that's why he was not liked. This is the way they interpret this phrase. Ramban has a different interpretation. Ramban says that he was so close with the sons of Bilhah, with the sons of Zilpah, so why, when they have to sell him, why didn't they intercede on him for him? He says that Reuben, we know a little bit later, that Reuben said we shouldn't harm him. Joseph, of course, was the second son. They were only 11, but the young wasn't, was not with him. So they were only a total of 11. Now, if he had the four sons, and Reuben and himself would be six, they would surely be stronger than the other five. Although you really can't tell, because Shimon and Levi already had the reputation as being the, you know, they could destroy a whole city. So we really don't know. But Ramban said we don't find the brothers, and even the sons of the concubines, we don't find them interceding for him at all. So therefore Ramban interprets this a little bit different. He says that he was a Nariz Nezilah Nezilpah, that what he did was the fact that he used to try to lord it over the Bilhah and Nezilpah, and then he would bring Lashon Hara about them. He didn't bring Lashon Hara about his brothers from Leah, because that was, he never had anything to do with them, but he'd bring Lashon Hara about the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. Now everybody ended up despising him. The brothers who saw the dreams that are mentioned, it says in sentence 4, the brothers saw that the father favored him, and they despised him. They couldn't look at him. And then he had this additional dream. So the brothers, the sons of Leah, didn't like him. The sons of Bilhah and Zilpah didn't like him, because he was the one, according to Ramban, that brought Lashon Hara about them to the father. So he really was a loner. Either way you look at it, whatever interpretation, you end up that he was a loner. We do learn, the Medrash does make this remark, and we know that's true, that you shouldn't favor openly one child over another, because the fact was that he favored Yosef over the brothers, Yaakov did that, and he was alienated, he was in his own, nobody seemed to love him, nobody liked him. Then when he had the dreams, so it says he had these two dreams. You notice in sentence 7, the first dream was, Anachnu me'almim alumim b'tei pasodeh. We were piling up sheaves in the middle of the field, and my sheaf arose and remained standing upright, and your alumosefem, your sheaves bowed down to my sheaf. So Hirsch makes an interesting observation. He says the word of alumosi, there's alumosi and there's ma'almim alumim. The ma'almim alumim means you take a lot of individual piles and you put it together. Alumasi means one small pile. So he says, Anachnu ma'almim alumim, we were all together, he tells the brothers. In fact, he was dreaming of that because he didn't want to be different than them. But what happened, as we were all together, piling up things in the field, so my individual little pile stood up, and all of your piles surrounded and bowed down to my pile. That means surrounded my pile as if I would be a king, and he bowed down to him. So the brothers answered him that you're not going to be a ruler, are you going to rule over us? You know, you're dealing with little piles. Piles, we're not dealing with any major problems, so they didn't really take it to heart. But the most he would be with the piles, perhaps he would be a sheriff. That doesn't mean anything. But then the next dream, that's when they felt they were in trouble, because they already dreamt that there'll be the sun and the stars, Shemesh, the Yireach, and Achad Aser Kechavim, the sun, the moon, 11 stars. Here's already you're speaking about world dominion, you know, you're not dealing about a sheriff in a small town. So this, they really reacted a little stronger, especially since he told it to the father. So first he told them that dream, and then he told it to the father in front of them. So it said, how does it say that, Vayom Elo, the father said to him, what is this dream that you dreamt? It's foolish. How could I and your mother and your brothers come to bow down to you? Your mother is no longer living. So Rashi says that really the dream meant, however, that Bilhah would come, and Zilpah, they were, you know, would come and bow down. His mother's servant would be in place of the mother. But the Ramban says that they also had died at this point, because we don't find any mention of them coming into Egypt. so it couldn't have related to them, because when it comes to Egypt, it doesn't say anything about the wives of Jacob. It says the wives of Jacob's sons. So he says the moon meant the entire household of Jacob. The sun meant Jacob. The moon meant the entire household of Jacob. The 11 stars meant the brothers, because they really came before them. Originally they came and then they all came together. So the 11 stars meant the brothers. And he says that Yaakov Avinu, only reason Yaakov Avinu went and screamed to him was because he realized that he's committing suicide. He knew that he wasn't the most loved, and now that he's coming to make such a statement publicly. But they were very concerned. Now in sentence 11 it says, Vaikanum Be'achov, they came to a stronger type of envy. Because here, he was really dreaming already in the major leagues. It wasn't like Ulalumis, it was already up in the stars. And the father, and he told it over yet before the father. And the father really just told him, what did you dream? Are we going to come? But he really didn't denounce him strongly. So this showed that the brothers became more estranged from him, more agitated, and they didn't want anything to do with him. So it says in sentence 12, the brothers then went, and another pointer points out that the dream to them was strange, because Joseph's first dream was sheaves of wheat. Now, sheaves of wheat means that they're actually agriculture. Now, they were all up to now shepherds. So it seems he's dreaming about agriculture, and really they were nomads, they were shepherds. So they figured that perhaps the father had indeed given him some understanding of the future, and that they weren't privileged to know about. So that means that perhaps there might be something through this favoritism that the father wants him to be the leader of the brothers. This is how they contribute. Now, Yosef really was very innocent. Now, the fact is that he had a dream, even if you don't believe in dreams, but one thing is clear, that a dream sometimes gives a person direction. Now, it may not be a heavenly sign that this is definitely going to happen, but it does give him a certain direction, and you have an idea what this person is concerned with. So then the brothers went away to Shechem. Now when they went to Shechem, why did they go? Shechem was very far away. And they went, it says, to tend the sheep. But Hirsch points out, if you read the Hebrew, that passage, sentence 12, there's an esnachto. The word under akor, you see there's a like a fork, a tuning fork. So it says, Vayelchu Be'achov, brothers went away. That's in the Snapto. They write Estein Aviyam Yishnem, to go ahead and tend the father's sheep in Shechem. But there's a stop after the brothers went away. It means that, you know, it shouldn't stop there. It says, Vayelchu, if it says they went to tend the sheep, so the place to stop or to pause would be after the word sheep. But in the passage it's written with the Talmid that the brothers went away. And you pause right there, they went away. The idea of their going, supposedly, was to take care of the sheep. But that wasn't really the reason they went. They went away, just to get away from him, to get away from the situation, to see what they could do and to strengthen themselves and unify themselves, because they felt they were seriously in trouble. Why were they in trouble? Because he was trying to take over the house of Yaakov. The tradition had been, as we pointed out in previous chapters, that there would be 12 sons who would be equal to the Greek, and those 12 sons would be total, but now one wants to be higher than the star and the moon, meaning that all of Klal Yisrael would be like subservient to him. At that time, they weren't realizing this, because up to now, historically, Esau's sons, or Esau's tributaries, had alufim, they had kings over them. But Yaakov supposedly was the equality, the democracy, everybody would be equal, not having a Nimrod or having a king to rule over them, but each tribe will have the same opportunity. So they had to gather together. And where did they go? They went to Shechem, because Shechem, it says, was a unifying force. Because there, we know that the sons of Yaakov rose up and said, HaKazena, Yasser, HaKazena, they were concerned for the virtue of the Jewish women, and they banded together to go against the enemy. So here they wanted to solidify the feeling, the fraternal feelings among themselves, so they went to Shechem. Now, he had this good Yaakov Avinu felt, that there must be, he has to go ahead and heal this breach. He has to heal the breach. He knew there was a breach because after he said this, he saw the brothers react. So he felt that if he won't let it fester, but if he would immediately send him there, this would bring about a reunification. So it says there that he said to Yosef, go to there, but you will know his name. I will go. His name, here I am, I'm prepared to go. So you see how Yosef reacted. I mean, Yosef didn't ask him why to go, but he initially gave Yosef no reason, but he just said, I want to send you there. Yosef said, Hineni, I'm prepared to go. Although he knew the brothers may be angry and so on, but he was prepared to go. So in a sense, Yaakov could have been testing him what was his relationship with his brothers. Would he hesitate or hem or haw? But he said, no, I'm prepared to go. Then Yaakov went ahead and he said, go see. In sentence 14, he gives him the mission. Sentence 13, he doesn't give him the mission. He just says, go to your brothers. Once he said he's prepared to go, then I openly has to give him some kind of a purpose to go. What's he going to go there? Yaakov Avinu's purpose was to get them together, but he had to. So he said, go find out and bring back a report what's happening there. So it says, Vayishlacheyu me'emek Chevron. Right? Emek Chevron literally means from deep down in Chevron, from the valley of Chevron, and he came to Shechem. But there's an interesting chazal on this pasuk, on this chapter, that he sent in. From the valley of Chevron, it says that from the Eitzo Amuko shel Chaver Ano HaKover B'Chevron. He sent him that this was really the deep down message of Avraham Avinu, who is buried in Chevron. Chevron, he says, can be taken apart the word and read like Chaver Noah, this very fine person, a very fine Chaver. Why? Because the revelation had come to Avraham Avinu that your children will be enslaved in Egypt. Now they had to get to Egypt. How are they going to get to Egypt? The Medrash in one place says that if Yosef would have not been successful in bringing them down to Egypt, Yaakov Avinu would have been put in chains and he would have been dragged down to Egypt. So the idea was that they had to go to Egypt. That was the main thing. But he brought about the events that the events should be in a nicer fashion. So when it says Me'emek Chevron, the word Emek, what does it say? He sent him, really it's superfluous. It should say, Vayishlachei, we sent him there. Why does he have to tell us that he was in the valley of Chevron? Totally irrelevant. They went to Shechem, wherever he has been for this whole chapter, from sentence 1 through sentence 14. So that's where he is. What does he have to tell us? He sent him from Chevron. So the word Emek Chevron seems to be superfluous. They interpret that he sent them in order to fulfill the destiny of the Jewish people, which was revealed to Avraham Avinu, who is buried in Chevron. That's another way of saying he sent them there. Now, when he came, he found the name Ish, a person, but it was really some say a Malach. And the Malach was there to lead him, because this was all heavenly designed and divine that this should happen. So he tells the Malach, where are they? The Malach says, I heard them say they're going to Dosef. You know, they're going over there in that place. And then it says, Yosef went and he found them there. Now he never came closer to them. It says he saw them from afar, and before he came to them, they plotted to kill him. Now, some interpret they plotted to kill him in his literal manner. They felt that they wanted to kill him before he reached them. Some say by shooting, not shooting arrows, but the Medrash says by shasres akel, they send wild dogs, because they didn't want to be guilty directly by spilling blood. That's what Reuben tells him later. He says, let's put him in the pit and let's not spill blood. Now there is a difference from spilling blood with your hands or causing the death, although the Gemara says in Dushan that really both are considered murder, but there's a difference in the severity of the crime. Because there are many people that may be able to cause someone's death, but they can't bring themselves to kill someone. So there is obviously a person who brings himself with his hands to kill someone is worse than both evil, but it's worse than the other way. So they tried to get a hold of the Yisnakul Amise indirectly, before he even came close to them. Now, on this word, the Yisnakul Osola Hamiso, Hirsch goes into a very lengthy discussion. He says, really, that he quotes the Sephorna, that the Sephorna says that we really cannot undertake it. And, I mean, we ourselves understand. What were the brothers? What did the brothers do? Why did they do? We can't really believe fathers of Klal Yisrael should be able to do such a terrible thing, wanting to kill their own brother, then to sell him. And then it says immediately right after they sat down to eat bread. Now, how can we even picture this? Now, it's true that obviously Torah writes, why did they do this? How could they do this? We can't say that the fathers of Israel were so rough. I mean, ancient nations, cannibalism, how could they be that? These were the Merkavas Hashkina. These were heavenly people. So specific, precisely because of that. Hirsch interprets and he brings the language that the language means that way. The Snaklu Oso Miso means they considered him, the Snaklu Oso, they judged him to be a Nochel. A Nochel meaning that he was trying to ensnare them. They judged him and they looked at him when he came towards them that he's coming now to come find something, go back to the Father. His whole life is determined to uproot us, just like Esav has nothing to do with Israel and Yishmael. He wants to take it all for himself. Therefore, they judged him. They judged him, and they didn't eat, because it says like a bezdin when there's a capital judgment given out. I mean, they would fast. But after they give out the judgment, then they would first eat to show that it was done with all seriousness, and they have no question in their mind that they gave out the proper judgment. Same thing was true here. They honestly felt that they were right in judging as like a usurper, a revolutionary that wanted to destroy their whole hope of Klal Yisrael. And therefore they judged him that Habo'alah, if somebody comes to kill you, you could kill him first. That's how they reacted. But it wasn't that they went ahead and they brought this to, now you'll say fine, that's very good, but the Torah still says that they hated him, they hated him. It would seem to be that's why they destroyed. Well, that could be true also. They did hate him. But a lot of times, that's him. I mean, they really, if you'd ask them if they hate him, they couldn't believe it. In fact, later, when they finally meet him, and so they're trying to ponder where is their guilt. So they finally come up that our guilt was that we heard him pleading for his life, and we didn't let. Not that they judged him wrong, not that they were wrong in selling him, but the Iskanino Aleinu, we saw a brother crying with tears in front of us, and we didn't react. That's all they found as being their guilt, because they honestly felt that they were acting in this point correct. But deep down, subconsciously, the Torah tells us clearly that the reason why they came to such a resolution, to such a judgment, was because within them they had this hatred, they had this fear, and they had this anxiety, and this jealousy, that caused them to give out such a resolution. But really, their intent was that they were really clean from this. And this is very important. Although at the same time, the commentaries do point out, Hirsch points out, that there is no question that the Jewish people, that they had azus. Azus meaning they had arrogance, not arrogance in a sense, but chutzpah, right? They had this great chutzpah, they had this strength. And we know otherwise, he said, they were chosen because they were az shehumos, the strongest. Because otherwise they couldn't fulfill the mission of Yaakov. No other next success that the Torah has. Because at the same time we have az shehumos, we have the strength to be able to withstand everything. And at the same time we have midos teivos, we have a certain refinement, we have a certain compassion, which others do not have. Because that the Torah was able to take this raw material and mold this, but the material, raw material, was there. But at the same time, you can't say that they were murderers. They weren't in that sense. They were mistaken in judgment. And the Torah writes, however, it doesn't hide it. It goes to the other extreme and says that they hated him and so on, because subconsciously this was the reason why it happened. And the interesting thing is, Akher Noah, he's saying as Bichay Lai, when they go ahead finally and they send the message back to the Father. So what did they send back? They send back the Xenus Pasim, this coat of many colors with blood on it. And they said to the Father, recognize that this is the coat. In a sense, what they're doing here, indirect, I don't know if intentionally or not, they're showing that the cause of all the blood and all the ill will and all this boils down to the Xenus Pasim. But Yaakov Avinu, as I said, was condemned for that, for favoring him and making him this kind of a coat that showed that he has a certain royalty. Now, Yaakov of Reuven came here. Now, Reuven was an interesting thing. Reuven, in a sense, saved his life. How did he save his life? No, it says 21, it says, Vayishma Ruben. They first said they're going to throw him into, they're going to kill him and throw him into one of the wells, and they'll say that peace devoured him. So it says, Ruben heard this, and he said, Lo na kenu nopish. Let us not what? Kill a person. So they say originally, Ruben tried to dissuade them even from indirectly causing his death. But he was not able to dissuade him from indirectly causing his death. So now, the dogs didn't work, the arrows didn't work, they're going to go ahead and kill him. So Ruben here says, I couldn't dissuade you like from indirectly, but at least lay not canon and ambush. Let's not put blood on our hands. Let's throw him into a pit, and then we'll see. Maybe that will be the proof, right? Raman, if God will say, you know, they told the brothers, let's throw him into a pit. At least we're not doing anything. What was his real purpose? His purpose was at a later time, he would come, by Shivai Elovi, bring him back to the Father. Now, when they put him into this empty pit, Medrash says that there were scorpions and snakes and all deadly reptiles there that could kill him. But they didn't see it. It was there, because if they would have seen it, and they would have seen that Yosef was not harmed, that would have brought them to their senses. So they, it says, did not recognize that there were, but actually there were all kinds of snakes and things in there. It also says that Reuben did not act properly, and it says like this, Ilu Yoda Reuben, famous quote, if Reuben would have known that the Torah would write, Vayishma Reuben, that Reuben heard, and he saved him, he would have taken him, come back and taken him immediately on his shoulders, and he would have taken him back home. So what does this mean? Reuben really didn't realize how important what he, you know, the moment that he was doing here, what he was doing would affect the whole Jewish people. That his interceding here had such significance that the Torah wrote, Vayishma Reuben v'yatzilei v'yodom. It attributes the salvation and the safety to Reuben. If Reuben would have known that, he would have gone ahead immediately and he would have taken him back. But he didn't know that. But anyway, they did listen to Reuben. And Reuben disappeared. He went away. Where did he go? So it says he went to pray and so on. And later when he came back, in sentence 29, it says Yosef was not there. And therefore, by Yitra's begotto. So he immediately rent his garments. And he went back in sentence 30, he went to the other brothers and he said, the child is not here. Vani onani bo, where am I coming? What will I do? So what does he mean, Vani onani bo, where will I do? Why should he have taken such feelings? Because simply we could say that he felt if he had not taken enough vigorous steps to prevent what had happened. He wanted to save his brother's life originally, but he had failed to complete the task. And he was the eldest of the brothers. He should have had enough necessary resolve to stand up against them. The reason why he didn't is because he was still troubled by his own sin. He was preoccupied with the sin that he had committed. The sin that he had committed in last week's Sedra, as the Medrash interprets this, was to move the bed of Yaakov out of one of the tents of the concubines, moving into Leah, to move the bed of Yaakov. So that was the sin that preoccupied him, and it really destroyed him, and he didn't feel the strength of leadership, the fact that he is indeed the poor, that he could exert such influence, and therefore, now he's bemoaning that fact. Or perhaps there it says there was another reason for his emotions. His emotions may have been because he was the firstborn, and he would be blamed because they'll say, oh, the firstborn was afraid that Yosef would get two portions instead of him, and which really happened later, that Ephraim and Manasseh, the children of Yosef, were two inheritances. So Reuben felt they would blame him. So therefore he had this strong reaction. Now, what did they do? They actually sold him. Now, who did they sell him to? So when you read the text, it's extremely confusing. Because first it says that they saw, in sentence 25, it says that they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes, and they saw a caravan of Ishmaelim coming from Gilad. And the caravan, the camels, were carrying all kind of balsam and different spices and fumes, which they used to, from Arabia, used to transport down to Egypt. Now, there were many tribes, many gangsters who would capture people and would sell people, dealing people, but the Ishmaelim would not. That means they wouldn't capture people and sell them as slaves. They wouldn't want it. So Yosef, they felt that if we sell them like the Ishmaelim, so he'll go back to Arabia, he'll be far away, he won't be a slave, but he'll just be out of our life. That's what they intended to do. Yet, the confusion is because right afterwards it says, in sentence 27, it says, let's go ahead and sell him again to the Ishmaelim, Yehuda said. Why should we go and kill him? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelim. So in 28, it says that people Midianites, they took him out. And it says, they sold Yosef to the Ishmaelim. Now this is very difficult. Here is, they sold him to Ishmael, and what were the Midianites doing there? And then later, there are two more references. In chapter 39, sentence 1, it says there that Potiphar, you don't have to, I'll just quote it, Potiphar purchased Yosef from the Ishmaelites who brought him down to Egypt. So there again it would seem that it would be what? Ishmaelites. But in verse 36, right over here, it says, Hamidonim makro sel Mitzrayim, that the Midonim and Midianim would be the same. They sell them to Egypt. Who was it? Was it the Ishmaelites or was it the Midianim? So some say that he was sold many times back and forth. Yet the text doesn't seem to imply that. So Hirsch explains it in the following way. He says the Ishmaelites were a tribe related to them. Now the Ishmaelites, he says, were not traders like who would indiscriminately traffic in human beings as well as in merchandise. So the brothers felt that they sell them to the Ishmaelite after they'll sell their spices and Mitzrayim will go far away back to Arabia. Now, he said what really happened, this assumption, he said, would be corroborated even more firmly if it may have been the case that the Ishmaelites had every intention of taking him home with them and would have done so had not the Midianite traders come by in the meantime. The Midianite traders bought Joseph from the Ishmaelites on speculation, and then sold him to Egypt. So, if we're told in verse 1 that Potiphar purchased Joseph from the Ishmaelites, this would have to be understood as an indirect transaction. The sale to Potiphar had been made by the Midianites, to whom the Ishmaelites had sold Joseph. All right, now in that case, the reason for naming the Ishmaelites as the first to whom Joseph passed in the hands of the brothers would be to explain why it would never have occurred to the brothers that he might be in Egypt. Now, in any event, either verse 36 of this chapter, or verse which says the Midianim sold him, or verse 1 of chapter 39 would have to be interpreted figuratively, not literally. So this is really the problem. So he says, in view of all these difficulties, the following interpretation would have much more to recommend. And this Hirsch goes that following. The brothers wanted to sell him to the Ishmaelites. But in the meantime, the traders anticipated them. They pulled Joseph from the pit and they sold him to the Ishmaelites. That means the brothers had intention to sell him to the Ishmaelites, but the Midianim were around there. So they took him, they anticipated this. They took him and they sold him to the Ishmaelites. So the brothers were under the impression that he was in the hands of the Ishmaelites and would go back to their homeland, but they could have not known that they had sold them in Egypt. But the truth was that the Ishmaelites sold them in Egypt. So when it says the Midianim makru Esau Mitzrayim, meaning that the Midianim who took him up and sold him to the Ishmaelites, they sold him to Egypt, which is still very difficult. The Ramban wants to say a little bit differently. The Ramban says that the Ishmaelites were the owners of the caravan, and they thought really that the Ishmaelites were here on their own. But the Ishmaelites transacted with the Midianim. They were just the riders and the owners. The real owners, the real Balabatim, were the Midianim. So the Ishmaelim were leading in everything, but it was the Midianim who were really the owners. Whatever it is, it wasn't nice. And Joseph ended up in Egypt. And the brothers, we know, were blamed, and we know how far they were blamed. Historically, the Asur, the Shema, remember we spoke last week about the generation of the Shema. when the great Tanoim had to suffer. So that's what we say in Yom Kippur in our prayers, in Musaf service, in the Slichas. So how did that come about? Of course it was ordained that they have to suffer. We don't know the reason. But it did come about, asked openly, supposedly, because they were being punished for the Mechiras Yosef, for the sale of Yosef. Because the brothers sold him for whatever they got. So therefore, how could they do that? So he said to them, the enemy, he said, there were never as great scholars in Israel as you. Now, Kablu Aleichem, you have to accept upon yourself this punishment. So this is what it did to our history. This is what it did. But at the same time, we must remember that it was not that they were actually kidnappers and murderers. It wasn't that. It came out bad. Because psychologically, in their inner thoughts, they had this hatred, and that misled them in their whole. The only complaint that they said, that they felt later, was even whatever the reason was, the fact is that when you hear a brother crying, and when we think into this, we could appreciate that. Maybe they realized finally at the end that, you know, that there was some reason, psychologically, subconsciously, they had this hatred. But this subconscious hatred should have been at least, should have come out, you know, when they heard the brother cry. And they still didn't realize that it was this subconscious hatred. It should have been able to pierce through everything else. And that's what they considered themselves. That means that that's true, they had some direction pushing them to sell, but at the same time, how could their hearts be made of stone that they didn't realize that the brother was crying? Whatever the reason was. Same emotion we had last week, remember we were speaking 2 weeks ago, same sentiment. When Leah tied to Rachel, she said, "You took my husband." So the Sephora says, "What do you mean you took my husband? What do you mean you took my husband?" It says in the Torah, Ishel Achosa Lesika Pitzroa, you shouldn't have two. One man should not marry two women, although they had more than one wife, you shouldn't marry two women to Tayyar. So what did she claim? But they didn't keep the Torah for this mitzvah. Yaakov married two women. But forgetting about the mitzvah, Sephora said, this was an emotion, a sentiment. You, being a sister, you would feel how estranged and how grieved, like how you would feel if you had another sister there. And I was here first. Forgetting what's right and what's wrong, but the sentiment of a sister, because a sister is such pain, that should have been overwhelming. And the same kind of thing here also. Forgetting what the judgment was, but you had a brother who was crying. How could your heart be so strong not to react? That's what really bothered me.